pretty excited about this episode because it's something that I think is really fun. You'll have to forgive my vocabulary. I just can't pronounce things very well. But we're talking about anticipatory repudiation. And I actually think I nailed that. But again, this is just talking about the consequences of non-performance. What is repudiation? Just to kind of work these two words apart to determine what's going on. Repudiation is the idea... is the rejection of an idea. So in the form of a contract, it's going to be the rejection to perform, telling the other party, I am not going to perform. And so if you think about this with anticipatory at the time, it's when one party can anticipate that a breach is going to occur, but it hasn't occurred yet. So you're anticipating a breach, anticipatory repudiation. Anticipating a lack of performance. So that's kind of what anticipatory repudiation is. Now we're just left with a couple of questions. If we know that the other party is going to breach, are we going to be able to call off the contract ourselves? What kind of damages or recovery is available for a person to call off a contract when a breach has not yet occurred? And so we're left with several restatements, the second in contracts, and the UCC to help us understand exactly what's going to be going on here. And then we've got a couple of cases that we're going to work through to kind of sum it all up. All right, let's start with the restatement, section 253. This just says, if a party repudiates before a breach, repudiation alone gives rise to a claim for a total breach. Notice that's the material breach that we were just talking about in our last episode. This is important because it does allow the non-breaching party to take steps to recover. Now the question is, what kind of steps can you do to recover? Let's talk about what is a repudiation according to the restatement. Section 250 has two ways that a repudiation occurs. It says that if party B says that it won't perform in the way that it should, that would be a total breach. The second way is that if party B takes a voluntary affirmative action, which makes it unable or apparently unable to perform, that would also be a total breach. So if party A is expecting party B to breach, well, then party A is anticipating repudiation. Does party A need to actually wait to terminate the contract? Well, according to section 256, a repudiating party can retract the... Oh, sorry. That's not the restatement I want to jump to first. The other restatements I've got here are just talking about adequate assurance. If you don't provide the other company with enough assurance, that would be repudiation. There's a lot of things to talk about. I'm sorry. Let me just organize my thoughts for a second. Ultimately, our takeaway is that A doesn't have to wait, but there's going to be some things that may prevent them so that they do have to wait before before they choose to repudiate the contract themselves. Let me go ahead and just keep moving along according to what my outline says. Section 256 of the Restatement Second of Contracts does allow a repudiating party to retract the repudiation if the injured party does not materially change their position before that retraction actually occurs. So, party A says, hey, heads up, I'm going to breach this. And so party B wants to terminate the contract. If party B does not change their position, then party A is free to take away that repudiation. So party B in that instance would be anticipating the repudiation, but is not currently anticipating it if party A ends up withdrawing that before party B changes their position. Let's talk about giving assurances, because giving assurance is a big part of this as well. When there are reasonable grounds to believe that the other party will not perform, the other party may request adequate assurance that they will perform. So party A is about to breach. Party B realizes that. Party B can ask party A, hey, will you promise that you'll perform, and will you do something to show me that you are going to perform? And you have to do so within a certain amount of time. Otherwise, I'm going to terminate this contract. So that's kind of what's working on there. The UCC, Chapter 2, Section 210, also outlines when repudiation may occur. According to the UCC, if repudiation does occur, there are three potential options. The first option is to wait for a commercially reasonable time for the other party to perform. The second is you can resort to a breach. Say they breached the contract, and so now I need to recover. And then the third way is that they don't need to perform. So if party A has something that is promised and party B has something that is promised, party B does not need to wait to perform based off of the actions of party A. Well, party B does not need to perform if party A is about to drop it off. Section 261, well, Chapter 2, 261, also mirrors the retraction of a repudiation, and just making sure that you haven't material changed your position. So I'm going to go ahead and sum this all up, just to summarize to make it feel pretty clear. If party A feels like party B is not going to perform, party A is anticipating repudiation. They may anticipate repudiation if party B, they may feel repudiation. And the way to prove that is that they feel insecurity about the fulfillment of the contract by party B. And this insecurity is going to be measured by party B's words and actions, their course of dealings, or course of performance between the two parties, the nature of their contracts that they have in the sales and the industry. And if that's the case, if they feel insecurity about the fulfillment of the contract, they can demand assurances. And if those demands are not met, then they are allowed to then terminate the contract. Both of these elements, feeling the insecurity and demanding assurances, need to meet up to a commercial standard of fair dealing. I think that's a pretty succinct summary of all the restatements. There's a lot there to cover, but ultimately I think that's a good, succinct understanding of how that works. Have a good one. Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Law Schoolers. Before I let you go, there are four things I want to say. The first thing is, if you enjoyed these episodes and if you enjoyed the website, I would invite you to go and join Law Schoolers Pro. And you can do that by going to lawschoolers.com/join. It's a way for you to support us, but there's also a lot of features there that I think you will enjoy. Second thing is that nearly all of our episodes are unedited. The only ones that aren't are pre-law materials. And the reason for that is so you can actually see the legal material in its raw form as I'm learning it. as well. The third thing is that the information contained in these episodes are specifically only for educational purposes. They're not to be used as legal advice. And with that, the fourth thing is, if it is used as legal advice, we are not liable. That is, law schoolers is not liable for any legal outcomes. Thank you again for enjoying the show. Have a good one.